Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On the local news roundup, the fallout continues over last week's CNN report alleging racist and misogynistic posts on a porn site are those of Mark Robinson. For his part, Robinson says, he stays in the race for governor, continues to deny the report, and threatens to sue CNN. Hurricane Helene comes ashore, bringing high winds and torrential rainfall and deaths to not only much of the Southeast, but to the Charlotte area. The Republican presidential campaign focuses on North Carolina. Both Donald Trump and J.D. Vance pay a visit this week. The Charlotte-Mecklenburg School Board votes to make student assignment changes. More are likely to come. And is the story of this Panther season now going in a different direction? Here to talk about those stories and more is Lisa Wharf, senior editor for WFAE News. Mary Ramsey is the local government accountability reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Hunter Sines is here. He's a reporter for WSOC-TV. And Mary C. Curtis is a columnist for RollCall.com and host of their Equal Time podcast. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to you all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We're all here hanging on by our fingernails by various different pieces of technology because of the storm. Hurricane Helene smashed into Florida. What was it, a Category 4 storm when it arrived in Florida? And then it moved up into the Southeast. It's a once-in-a-generation storm, they say, which means next year we'll have another one just like it. It was predicted to bring torrential rains and high winds and flash flooding. What happened here? What are we talking about here, Lisa?
We're kind of in the thick of things right now, and will be for the next few hours. And what we're seeing is flash flood warnings throughout the Charlotte area through at least 11 o'clock right now. Thousands of power outages. I think the last time I checked, it was about 84,000 people out of power just in Charlotte. And there has been at least one report of a death. A tree fell on a home in northwest Charlotte and killed one person in there. They say there were children in there. They were not harmed. And one person has been hospitalized. So in this area, it's still coming through at this point.
Mary Ramsey, the Observer, wrote about this, obviously, and things change minute to minute when a storm comes through like this. You're sitting in the dark at the moment because you have no power. How many customers in this region, according to the Observer, are out of power?
So as Lisa mentioned, here in Charlotte, we're hovering around 80,000 without power, tens of thousands more around the region in North and South Carolina. And for Duke Energy, across all of North and South Carolina, we're over 880,000 outages. So a lot of people like me trying to work in the dark this morning.
And there have been some flooding evacuations in areas of Charlotte. How bad has the flash flooding been from there? But they're saying that I think Mountain Island Lake is going to be 10 feet above normal. Is that right, Hunter?
It's my understanding there's actually a mandatory evacuation for some of those neighborhoods there around Mountain Island Lake, but that is correct, Mike. And also it's important to notice that first responders have had difficulties getting to some of these families who are in those homes. I know our crew out there saw the National Guard truck even get swallowed up in water pretty much there near Riverside Drive, trying to help as best they can. So I think just take the precautions. I know we're on the air at least till 10. That tells me that it is still windy and rainy out there, at least until that point.
This reminds me a little bit of Hurricane Hugo. Hunter, you and I were talking just before the program about what's going on in Atlanta, where they are essentially experiencing hurricane force winds of 80 to 85 miles per hour, which was the wind speed when Hurricane Hugo came through Charlotte. And if you were here then, you weren't. But if you were here then, you know the devastation that Charlotte experienced during that storm.
I've heard from some of our longtime photographers who were here when that happened of just how devastating it was. I can only imagine what people in Atlanta are waking up to. Not only did they have those winds, but they had the torrential rain. I think everybody talks about, of course, the storm surge on the coast. But when you're a metropolitan city as big as Atlanta, the rain and the winds are huge factors, especially when you're talking about tropical force style.
Well, you're sitting at Channel 9 in their conference room right now. And if you were there then, you know that a tower fell through the center of Channel 9's building during Hurricane Hugo. That's how bad things were. And one of the things that I remember about this, Mary Curtis, I believe you were here during Hugo, is the fact that we Charlotteans didn't really know what was coming their way. It was kind of a surprise when it hit us in the middle of the night and we woke up in the morning to see all these trees down through Myers Park and elsewhere. And that may be part of what's going on here. I'm not sure people really understood what this was going to do during this storm. Would I be accurate in that, Mary?
Well, I actually wasn't here during Hugo. I got okay. here after that. But right okay. now, I'm in the dark, and in the Myers Park area, the little creek has flooded over into the street. And there was a huge, big branch that did miss our house, thank goodness. So I do think that it's going to be a surprise for a lot of people just how much it's going to affect you when you're living in a city and you think, oh, it's usually most of our storms that come up passed in to the west of us. So this is a bit of a surprise.
Hunter.
I just wanted to also mention, I didn't want to leave them out, our listeners, of course, up in the mountain regions, because they are getting pummeled with so much rain. There are mudslide potentials there. I know Asheville, even we had a tornado beforehand and blowing rock before the storm even made it here. So they are definitely taking, I think, the brunt of this storm, at least in our region.
And there are areas. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And there was talk that, you know, this could equal some of the flooding that was seen back 90 years ago that was record-setting floods in the mountains in Asheville.
And there are areas of Charlotte, including Freedom Park, that are under tornado watches until 10 or 11 o'clock this morning. So just be on the lookout. Keep tuned for warnings and have your phones ready, because you get those alerts now on your phone about weather as well. Let's
Brian,
move
can
on
I just
to...
say global warming? Global warming, we, as you said earlier, we seem to have these once-in-a-lifetime floods and weather events every year now. So I think we'll just look forward to the future of getting more of these.
Yes, indeed. And several houses, I believe, this week prior to the hurricane along the coast fell into the ocean again. That continues to be a problem on our coastline. Well, the Mark Robinson saga continued this week, days after CNN reported uncovering racist and misogynistic comments on a pornography website, among other things, allegedly posted by the lieutenant governor. Nearly all of Robinson's campaign staff quit. I understand that on October the 1st, his lieutenant governor staff, his office staff, is intending to quit. But the state Republican Party is sticking with him, and he continues to deny these reports. So just who quit on his campaign staff?
Well, you have the big people, basically. You have almost everyone. There was reporting that basically it's just two spokespeople right now and a bodyguard on his campaign staff.
Have they hired replacements, tried to hire replacements? Will they bother to hire replacements this late in the game?
There has been no announcements just yet. Now, Robinson did tweet yesterday, "Our campaign continues to gain momentum like never before." But he also said earlier in the week, "We'll let you know we're rebuilding, and we'll let you know when our campaign staff is headed." So hired. So it's slim bones there.
Gone. Senior advisor, deputy finance person. I think Mark Robinson is finding that being Trump-like, you aren't Teflon-like Trump. He's doing the usual, this is the media's fault, this is folks coming against me, but it's not working for him. And the Trump campaign folks are backing away slowly, even though the Democrats are trying to unearth every picture and every statement that Trump and every Republican had supporting Mark Robinson.
Better.
Yeah, and just last night, I mean, if you didn't think they were in damage control already, they really are when his wife put out a video through the campaign, Yolanda Robinson, just last night, a 2-minute long social media ad. I haven't seen it on television yet, but it's 2 minutes of her basically fighting for her husband, saying, "I know the Mark Robinson I married and I chose however many decades ago. And he is not the man that is portrayed in the media." So you know that they are in damage control when they are going to that extent to put that out there at this point in the game.
So I guess everybody knows that Mark Robinson, the lieutenant governor, is running for governor in this race. And He continues to deny these allegations adamantly. Here's what he said at his very first appearance following that CNN report.
I'm going to start off by ignoring all their salacious lies. We're not going to talk about that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about you.
The comments that we're alleging here were posted on the website Nude Africa under the handle Mini Soldier. Well, soldier, but it's Mini S-O-L-D-R, which CNN was able to connect to Mark Robinson's name and even to an email that he has used. Yet Robinson has said he had nothing to do with these comments. It wasn't him. From what we know about how CNN conducts business and journalism, is there any way that they could have gotten this wrong?
So I kind of like
Mark Robinson has retained a lawyer. He announced this week in order to try and refute these claims. That being said, as you alluded to, CNN is a very reputable organization. This was one of their top investigative teams that put this report together. So it appears that Robinson is certainly determined to try and poke some holes in it, but it remains to be seen whether he can do so successfully.
And I think one of the problems with that is very few people have said this doesn't sound like anything Mark Robinson would say. Because the things he is on record as saying have been pretty out there about gay people, about he seems to have a special animus for Martin Luther King, about the civil rights movement. And so I think that's very difficult when even his wife and folks are trying to say, this isn't the Mark Robinson I know, because to many people, it sounded like the Mark Robinson they know.
Yeah, Lisa?
And there's been reporting out there. This is kind of interesting because, you know, Trump has refused to say anything about Mark Robinson, whether he endorses or not. Of course, you know, Mark Robinson has been nowhere near his campaign when he's been in town Saturday and on Wednesday. But a super PAC that has been associated with Trump is, according to Open Secrets and other reporting, has paid nearly $2 million to that law firm that's working with Robinson now.
It's the local news roundup on Charlotte Talks here this morning on WFAE. In those posts, he calls himself a black Nazi, says slavery wasn't bad, says he would like to own a few himself. He wrote that he enjoyed watching transgender pornography, among other things. Has any polling come out since that CNN report was released last Thursday that would indicate how this has impacted the race? Do we know? We may not.
I don't think the polls have come out since then. The polls that even were before, though, weren't very good. And I think one of the attacks on him, too, after this reporting has come out, would be the hypocrisy of it. Because, as you mentioned, he talks about liking certain kinds of transgender pornography, and he has basically really, really attacked the idea of transgenderism and said, oh, there's not the two sexes. And so it's not just the site and the porn, which is pretty outrageous as it is, but the fact that it seems very different from this certain, you know, image of moral rectitude that he has promoted.
And of
Fox
course,
News 8, Fox News 8 in Greensboro reported on a Robinson appearance, and shortly after these revelations came out, they say a small group of protesters showed up, shouted during the speech, but some of those gathered to hear him are still with him.
I support him since he's been in office. I support just trying to make America back, bring America back, bring our values back.
And days later, at a Trump appearance at a business in Mint Hill, WFAE Steve Harrison spoke with Ed Austin, who still wants to do some more research about Robinson before making a final decision on whether or not to vote for him.
I'm going to wait and get all my information before I decide if I'm going to or not going to vote for Mark. So I met him 2 weeks ago at the Cabarrus County Fair. Nice guy.
And
so
I think,
when we come back, we'll talk about the Republican governors and some of our senators, other lawmakers who are Republicans, and what they've had to say about all this. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with Lisa Wharf, senior editor at WFAE News, Hunter Sines, a reporter for WSOC-TV, Mary C. Curtis, columnist and at TheRollCall.com, host of their Equal Time podcast, and Mary Ramsey, local government accountability reporter for the Charlotte Observer. We just played a cut that part of a conversation Steve Harrison had at a Trump rally in Mint Hill with somebody who's still making up his mind about whether or not to vote for Mark Robinson. Lisa, you wanted to chime in on that.
Yeah, I think that response is also telling because here, you know, this wasn't your sort of traditional rally. This was, a speech at a manufacturing facility with about 100 diehard, Trump supporters. And it's interesting that, there's some indecision there. There's some thought process that let's see how this plays out. Indication of, how this may be sitting with voters.
The Republican Governors Association has halted all spending for his campaign. They're saying that, they've just decided to allocate money to other important races, but he continues to have the support of the state GOP, though some Republicans are a bit cautious, North Carolina Senator Tom Tillis among them.
If Mr. Robinson doesn't put forth facts as part of a lawsuit that would discredit the sources by this week, then we've got to move on. We've got an election that's 40 days away.
So what if some of the other state Republicans had to say about this situation?
Well, and I would say, too, as far as, the state Republican statement out last week, it was tepid, right? I mean, it focused more on the party and the Republican values than Robinson. But you've had a range of reaction. I think, along with Tillis, some of the state Council of State races, for example, Lieutenant Governor Hal Weatherman has said he's got to prove, he's got to prove these allegations are false. State Treasurer candidate saying something along the same lines. But people worried that Robinson is going to drag them down.
Yeah, and Dan Bishop was running for attorney. Dan Bishop is running for attorney general. Has said he's just focused on winning his race for attorney general. Mary.
Yeah, Bill Graham, who ran against him in the primary and lost, is engaging in a little, I think, well-deserved "I told you so," because he warned when he was running in the primary that this is not someone that we want representing us in the race. And it's interesting, there've been reports on what Mark Robinson did as lieutenant governor, lieutenant governor, and he did not have much to do, and he didn't do a lot of that. There were a lot of state senate that he's supposed to preside over. He didn't show up there. He was leading the energy policy council, serving on the state board of education, but he made a lot of speeches and went on a lot of right-wing news sites, and it sort of shows you how the Republican Party and base now, they are a little bit more interested in folks who are firebrands, and he was a firebrand, but this has come back to bite them in several cases, and they've lost in this country some winnable races because the person they picked in the primary turned out to be a little bit extreme when it came to the general election. Of course, it hasn't resulted in most cases in as big a scandal as this.
Even Donald Trump is backing away a little bit by saying nothing. He's been pretty much silent about this, and he was a big endorser of Mark Robinson prior to this. And Governor Cooper, speaking at a New York Times climate conference, took a moment to criticize Trump for normalizing people like Robinson.
Donald Trump makes guys like Mark Robinson, supports them, encourages them, still hasn't condemned him in any way. He needs to suffer the consequences of creating and supporting people like Mark Robinson.
Meanwhile, Trump's running mate J.D. Vance says that what Robinson did or did not do is between him and the people of North Carolina. North Carolina's junior Senator Ted Budd calls the allegations disturbing and has called on Robinson to prove that they're not true. But Robinson, who's still in the race and denying everything, has taken a page from Donald Trump's playbook. He's threatening to sue CNN.
We're in talks right now, everything up to legal counsel to take CNN to task for what they have done to us. We are going after them, okay? We are going to go after them for what they've done. But we have 5 weeks left in this race, folks, and make no mistake about it. We are not going to let CNN throw us off of our mission.
So stay tuned. Well, because of shifting polls and because some now believe that North Carolina is a must-win state for Donald Trump and would also provide several pathways to 270 electoral votes for Kamala Harris, should she take the state, the candidates continue to come here. In fact, during his speech in Mint Hill, Trump told the crowd, if we win North Carolina, we're going all the way. Is he correct about that?
I think North Carolina is almost a must win for Trump in the whole mapping of him winning. So I do think there's some truth there. I will say very quickly, I know we're moving on, Mike, but just last night, President Trump did respond to a reporter's question about will he pull the endorsement from Robinson? And he said, quote, I don't know the situation, and walked off. Now, unless you're living under a rock, especially in this political sphere, I don't know how one does not understand the situation at hand. It's made national news, national headlines, totally not believable there. But I do think, going back to the base, I mean, Mr. Trump really put Robinson on the map when he started endorsing him, going to rallies with him and everything else. I think at this point, with 40-ish days left, the endorsement being pulled, if it is going to be pulled by President Trump, would probably be the last straw on Robinson. But you look at the polls and he's already down 14 points to Josh Stein, and that was taken before this even came out.
So J.D. Vance was here on go ahead, Mary. Go ahead.
Hold on.
Mary Ramsey first, then Mary Curtis. I'm sorry.
Okay.
When it comes to, you know, will the endorsement officially be pulled or not, remains in question, yes. But I mean, Mark Robinson was a regular fixture at Trump events. He has not appeared at any of the recent Trump or J.D. Vance events in North Carolina. Neither candidate on the presidential ticket has expressly come out and supported him, said we believe Mark Robinson when he denies these allegations. Right. There, as you mentioned, the Republican Governors Association is pulling their money. The polls don't look good. I mean, often in politics, it's not an explicit situation where someone comes, it's just going to come out and say, I unendorse this candidate. They simply walk away and they take their money with them. And that's really what we're seeing in the governor's race right now.
Mary Curtis.
And just briefly, you see all the candidates from both parties come to North Carolina. It is pivotal, the 16 electoral votes. The Republicans really pretty much need it. It would open up so many pathways for the Democrat. And now the Republican candidates, when they come here, they know they will be asked about Mark Robinson, so they'll have to either fudge it. You know, so it does hinder them somewhat. And then there's all those little races down the ballot that are so tight and so important. So you can see why the state Republicans are a little bit nervous about the Robinson effect.
So J.D. Vance was here on Monday at the Halton Theater at Central Piedmont, so main campus. On Wednesday, that marked the second time in a week that Donald Trump has been to the state. He spoke for more than an hour in front of an intimate group that was described as an intimate group of people at a manufacturing company in Mint Hill about jobs and the economy, but started by talking about a reported foreign assassination plot against him by operatives in Iran. U.S. intelligence officials had identified that threat, so Trump made a threat of his own.
If I were the president, I would inform the threatening country, in this case Iran, that if you do anything to harm this person, we are going to blow your largest cities and the country itself to smithereens. We're going to blow it to smithereens. You can't do that. And there would be no more threats.
What is this all about?
I think in many ways it's about
a smithereens.
I'm sorry, Mary was talking first. Go ahead.
I think in many ways it's about appealing to his base, who respond, as you heard in that clip, very well to a very hawkish message. Trump has repeatedly brought up the two assassination attempts on his life, trying to, and I don't mean to minimize the disturbedness of an attempt on a former president's life, but he has definitely not shied away from bringing it up on the campaign trail, sees it as an area where he can really keep his base energized and perhaps even draw some sympathy from people within the Republican Party who aren't necessarily big fans of him, but don't want to vote for Kamala Harris.
Hunter.
Mike, this is about, go ahead, Mary.
No, I just wanted to say that he has blamed the assassination attempts, which are very serious, and has caused the Secret Service to really be upended because of their lapses. But he tends to say this is the fault of what the Democrats say this is the media's fault. And just in truth, this seems serious, but it's a broader issue on the Secret Service, on looking at what foreign countries are trying to do and have an effect in American politics. And he brings it up as a sense of, well, this is what people are doing to me.
So in addition to talking about his assassination attempt allegedly coming from Iran, at that Mint Hill gathering, Trump spoke about reducing corporate taxes and promising that under his presidency, the country wouldn't lose manufacturing jobs to foreign nations. But did he provide any details on how he would accomplish those things, Mary Ramsey?
He did. He said that he would provide tax cuts to corporations that base their manufacturing in the United States and impose tariffs on foreign-made goods. This is something he has mentioned before. It is something some economists have called into questions, saying that all of these additional tariffs would likely pass on additional cost to consumers, raising the price of goods and services here in the U.S. So the actual viability of the plan has been called into question by some experts, but he did lay out some details, pretty much as much detail as you're going to get in a campaign stump speech.
Elon University just released a poll they conducted to learn where North Carolina voters stand on both the presidential and the gubernatorial races. What did it reveal about the presidential race? Who can take that question? Hunter.
Vice President Harris is up 46-45 for Mr. Trump. So it is razor thin, still well within the margin of error. As we are 40 days out.
And as you mentioned earlier, Stein has a commanding lead over Robinson. That poll was taken between September 4th and 13th, which means it was before the allegations made by CNN about Robinson. Are we to assume that Stein's lead is larger now?
I think it would be a possible safe bet, is what I'll say.
Yeah, back then, I think there was 9-10% undecided voters. So that may be shifting too. And earlier this week, there was a New York Times Siena poll that was out that I think the timing coincided just shortly after the Robinson revelations, and that put Trump at 48% and then Harris at 47%. So still, you know, very very thin on both of those polls.
That Elon poll also indicated that among voters over 18, Harris is surpassing Trump on some key issues. She is thought by those voters to have the most inspiring view of the future, the right temperament to be president, and is more likely to support environmental sustainability, more likely to choose fair and impartial judges. While Trump was ahead of Harris when voters considered the candidate most likely to promote a healthy and growing economy and job creation, someone more likely to support crime-fighting efforts and solve the immigration problem. Mary Curtis, does it surprise you that abortion is not mentioned on these two lists?
Well, I think abortion is in there, and I think it's important. I think for all age groups, the economy is a big a focus, which is one reason why you saw Vice President Kamala Harris do a big economic interview with MSNBC Stephanie Ruhle when she was laying out details of her plan, because people keep talking about the details. But I do think, particularly for women, that abortion rights, more health rights for women, is a big deal, particularly when you've had those cases come out of Georgia, a ProPublica report that said that lack of health care and abortion care might have led to the death of two women. So I think that is a big deal.
And because Donald Trump tends to make everything the best ever or the worst ever, we are now living, according to him, in the worst economy in the history of the world, because he had the best economy in the history of the world. But by all measures, today's economy, except for inflation caused by the pandemic and profiteering and some of the measures that pump money into the economy to kickstart us out of the pandemic, the economy is better today than it was prior to the pandemic. And employment is higher. The stock market is much higher. Illegal border crossings have fallen. And the bipartisan bill that would have addressed a lot of valid Republican concerns about our porous border was shot down at the request of Donald Trump. And by all measures, crime is also way down. So, Mary Curtis, why haven't Democrats been able to get that message across? Nobody seems to believe that.
Well, that's true, because we do have such a partisan atmosphere now that when Donald Trump says, I had the best economy ever and it's terrible now, it is not true, but you say something enough. And also, I think people go to the grocery store and they still see some of the groceries are higher. So it's not a matter of just facts, it's a matter of feeling. And so I think that's why you have it. But a lot of it is partisan, I believe. And some of it is like when people talk about gas prices, they're very low right now. But actually, presidents don't really have a lot to do with that. But it's just that you get the credit or the blame when you are the president for so many things. So, you know, I think that they will, if people start to feel it, the Fed has lowered the interest rates. That might have an effect on people feeling better about the economy. And you notice that Kamala Harris has been talking a lot about housing, because people talk about the availability of housing and housing costs. So they're just going to keep repeating that message and hope it sinks in to that very sliver of so-called, I don't see how anybody can be undecided at this point, but apparently there are a few, and those people will make the difference. And then, of
it's
course,
the local news roundup on WFAE Charlotte Talks. Sorry, I had to jump in there, Mary. We're over time for a thing here. After a long delay in getting absentee ballots in North Carolina out to the voters and into the hands of those voters because of the state Supreme Court mandating that they be reprinted to remove Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s name, they have now been sent out. And as of Monday, this is quick, 102 ballots from military members and overseas voters have already been returned to the state. State Board of Elections Executive Director Karen Brinson-Bell, though, has a piece of advice regarding voting absentee in this election. Make sure that you ask for your ballot sooner than later.
The Postal Service is emphasizing that. We're emphasizing that. And, you know, making that request on October 29th is going to be really hard on election officials to get that processed back to the voter and then for the voter to have sufficient time to return it.
So even though these ballots went out late, they will not be accepted late. When must these absentee ballots be received by the Board of Elections to be counted? I've stumped the panel.
That's been changing a bit lately. And so I've been trying to remember what the latest tally on that is.
At last report, it's 7:30 p.m. on election day. That's the latest it can be received. It used to be that if you were postmarked by election day, they would count those ballots afterward. But no, they have to be in their hands by 7:30 p.m. that day. So be aware of that if you plan to vote absentee. When we come back, CMS is playing with student assignment. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about harassment there and more on Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. Listener supported. It's the local news roundup. I'm Mike Collins with Lisa Wharf from WFAE News. Mary Ramsey, local government accountability reporter with the Charlotte Observer. Mary C. Curtis, a host of the Equal Time podcast for RollCall.com, where she's also a columnist. And Hunter Sines is a reporter for WSOC-TV. This week, the CMS board, school board, started doing the magnet shuffle, Lisa. They voted on Tuesday to make several changes to student assignments, mostly affecting those magnet schools. What did they decide?
They decided, as far as arts, there's an arts magnet shuffle, which is an interesting one because they've spent millions, lots of money trying to upfit these schools, and the demand for them has fallen off. But all these, you know, spaces are now opening. So that's going to be something to really track in the future. There's also been a change up in Davidson with changing K through 8 back to an elementary school, which there was a big sort of K through 8 push for a while back there. So undoing that change. And Dorothy Vaughn, there's a magnet school, STEM magnet school in North Charlotte, and that's moving 8 miles away to another school, and that's, you know, upset some parents there. But some of the big things that they decided not to do, one of the big things was there was going to be 800 new magnet seats at what are called middle colleges, so they'd become early colleges. These are high school programs on CPCC campuses. And right now, they do 11th and 12th grades, and the plan was to add 9th and 10th grades, and that got some pushback, and you know, the board ultimately decided not to pursue that. It was a close vote on that.
The district also is holding off on moving the Montessori program at J.T. Williams to Marie G. Davis until a new relief school on Park Road opens in the 2026-27 school year. That resulted in a unanimous decision by the school board, and board member Lenora Shipp believes that what they came out with was the best possible outcome.
I really believe this is in the best interest at this time for all of the schools involved, the students, and the families. And I am pleased that we got to this.
So this is the first round of changes. There will be more to come as we go through the winter and into the spring. We'll be reporting on that in the coming months. This week was Banned Books Week around the country, Mary Curtis. The American Library Association uses this week to educate the public about historic attempts to censor books and to celebrate the freedom to read. But CMS evidently told their librarians at their schools not to explicitly observe the week. They want to maintain neutrality on this issue. The Charlotte Observer quoted Stacy Stagg, the CMS parent, as saying, by asking librarians not to celebrate Banned Books Week is not truly maintaining neutrality. Mary Curtis, is she right?
Well, I can say my opinion here. They want the CMS to just promote reading in general. And as you say, we're in the midst of this time when groups like Moms for Liberty are saying that you should ban some books and not take books off of shelves. And we see nationwide over 4,000 books have been taken off shelves, primarily by LGBTQ authors or dealing with those themes, or by authors of color, particularly women of color. And so, you know, we have a majority-minority school district, and we're basically taking a lot of books that might be of interest that show history and experiences of their community. To me, and it's my opinion, it's saying you don't matter to some of those students. But they don't want to get in trouble with North Carolina's Parental Bill of Rights law. And so they are just walking this line. Last year they got in trouble because they said, we won't celebrate Banned Books Week. And a lot of parents took issue with that and saying, oh, wait there. So now they're trying to walk that tightrope and saying, promote reading, but don't be explicit about saying Banned Book Week. And we see that a lot of people felt when these laws came down that there would be a lot of self-censorship. And I think this is an example of it. As I say, it's my opinion.
Okay. That's why you're here. You're a columnist. The CMS board, is going to consider adding new language to its harassment policy to explicitly protect staff and students from being harassed on the basis of gender identity or sexual orientation. Lisa, what precipitated this?
Well, Dee Rankin, vice chair of the CMS school board, has said this is basically streamlining things, that this was in, you know, this language was in other policies. And so it was brought to their attention that this harassment policy didn't contain those explicit protections. So they've decided to weigh adding that.
And board member Dee Rankin says this makes the language more consistent across all of the district's policies.
These particular policies in general cover a multitude of different things. The reason it's so important is we want to make sure that our students are safe and our employees are safe in our schools.
This will not be a unilateral decision. They will hold a public hearing on this. When might that take place?
That is a good question. I cannot remember off the top of my head right now. So it's still kind of preliminary at this point.
Usually when we talk about CMS or about North Carolina Public School test scores, the news is rather depressing. This week, amazingly enough, it is not. Evidently, more North Carolina high schoolers are taking college-level AP classes and passing exams to earn college credit more than ever before. What accounts for this? Why is this happening?
Yeah, as WUNC was reporting, there's, I think, more than 84,000 North Carolina students taking exams and more than 65% getting passing scores. And they say, you know, a big factor is because that the state is has decided a few years ago to pay for these exams for students and is also partnering with the people who administer the exams for training and things like that. So there's certainly been a big push in that area.
So a lot of people, including some politicians, have made the case that our public schools are failing because of other test scores. Is this somehow proof that that's not true?
Well, things are looking up in this department, for sure.
Okay. We turn now to the Charlotte Observer's local government accountability reporter. You may ask yourself, how busy is Mary Ramsey? How busy could she be in that job? Well, it turns out very, because you reported this week, Mary, that more than 1,500 open records requests filed with the city of Charlotte in the last 5 years went unfulfilled. Good heavens, why? Mary, are you there?
So the city says that they're... Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Yes. So the city, that they are dealing with a surge. The number of records requests that they have received year over year has more than quadrupled since 2019. They said that that has put a big strain on their system. A lot of the staff members who are handling these requests, it's not their primary job responsibility. They say they are staffing up to help address these issues, migrating to a new system that will allow them to address requests more efficiently. But you've still got, again, as you said, more than 1,500 requests sitting there unfulfilled, some of which have sat there for years. One of the ones that we spotlighted in this report was an observer request that went unfulfilled for more than 2 years regarding Tepper Sports' decision to pull out of the Eastland Yards development. We did eventually receive some records less than 24 hours before I had an interview scheduled with City Manager Marcus Jones for the story we're discussing.
So they're swamped. Is this a manpower issue? Is it a technology issue? Is it an example of stonewalling and simply wanting to keep some things close to the vest? What is the real reason? Do you know?
The city says that they are working to staff up and improve technologies. That being said, I talked to multiple experts from here in North Carolina on public records who say that many of these issues equate to delays tantamount to denial. North Carolina's public record law, unlike some of our neighbor states, does not set a specific deadline. It simply says government agencies have to fulfill records requests, quote, as promptly as possible. That leaves a lot of gray area for organizations to stall, frankly, and that is an area of concern. Experts told me it's not as simple as putting in deadline, but that there are things that can be done to improve our state public records law and help avoid some of these issues.
Even members of Charlotte City Council have complained about, they've expressed frustration with the apparent lack of transparency on the part of city staff with things that they need to know or want to know to make their decisions on council. Is this part of that, or is this an entirely separate issue?
I think it's part of that. I think public records are a core aspect of transparency. And if you've got more than 1,500 requests sitting there unfulfilled, and you've got elected officials saying that city staff are also not at times being transparent with them, that speaks to a transparency problem. City Manager Marcus Jones told me that he values transparency, that he feels that a lot of the criticisms from city council members are more about process, that he's open to improving processes and wants to strengthen trust with city council and with the public. But I mean, the numbers don't lie. When these requests are sitting there unfulfilled, when you've got a backlog going back more than a year for city council meeting minutes being publicly available, it certainly seems like there is issues with transparency.
And this is not a problem simply for the media that needs this information to get it out to the public, or city council who needs this information to make appropriate decisions. It's also a challenge for individuals. You say that 20% of those record requests are filed by individuals, and they're experiencing, excuse me, the same delays.
Often even worse delays. I talked to multiple experts who said it's often easier for a reporter or a lawyer to get their records because they know the rules. They know how to make a request. And when individuals need vital information, I've had multiple people reach out to me since this story published yesterday, sharing their stories. You know, they need information about something and they simply feel stonewalled. Amanda Martin, who is a veteran communications lawyer here in North Carolina, told me that it's often not until an individual talks to a lawyer and gets a lawyer involved that they're able to get the records, not just in Charlotte, but across the state. And that's a serious problem.
Well, that was my next question. Is this a problem that is particular to the city of Charlotte, or is this a problem throughout the state of North Carolina? Do other cities experience this? Do reporters, do individuals who are requesting information from the state of North Carolina also experiencing these same kinds of delays? And if so, what's the excuse?
I've talked to multiple experts who said they are hearing about increasing problems, whether it's delays in getting records, whether it's municipalities and state agencies trying to start charging more fees for people to get the records that they requested. And oftentimes what you hear from these agencies is the same thing Charlotte said, which is we're getting more and more requests. They're more and more complex, which means it takes more time to fulfill them. But you've got people who are getting really concerned, coupled that with the fact that the state legislature last year voted to exempt themselves from a lot of public records requirement that earned the General Assembly the Black Hole Award from the Society of Professional Journalists earlier this year. So I, Amanda Martin, who is, I would argue, the leading expert in the state on this, told me that she really does think the situation is, quote, getting worse here in North Carolina.
And this is a bipartisan issue, at least it is on council, but Councilman Tariq Bakari says it will take, quote, a majority of council members to step up and say no to the way things have been operating if we are expecting things to change. Does council have the time or the political will to engage in this conversation, or will they just let it continue?
That remains to be seen. You know, we've talked about on this show before, during the Panther Stadium controversy, during the transit vote, there were all these comments from city council, concerns about transparency, concerns about the process. And as Councilmember Bakari said, he hears that frequently during these big decisions, and then it doesn't seem to actually be any will to change things. So it's in the hands of the council. As he said, they could band together and call for change if they wanted to, but it remains to be seen if that's something that a majority of them are going to step up and prioritize.
You think your article will make a difference at all?
I would certainly like to see it make a difference. It's certainly both a little heartening and disheartening to hear from readers across our community in the wake of it publishing about issues that they've faced. It's certainly disheartening for reporters like myself, and I'm sure others on this call can empathize with having long waits for records and then not really getting much of anything when something does come through. So I would certainly love to see it create change, but that remains to be seen.
Mary Ramsey is the local government accountability reporter for the Charlotte Observer, who is fighting this battle for you with her fingernails out. It's Charlotte Talks on the Local News Roundup on WFAE. One person is dead, Hunter, and a police officer shot during an incident during a traffic stop. This is last Sunday night. It's gotten very little attention. I didn't know anything about this until yesterday. What happened?
Yeah, so Sunday night, there was an assault with a deadly weapon that police officers down in the East Arrowwood Road and Nations Ford Road area were responding to initially. And a patrol car with two police officers inside pulled over someone who they believed could have been involved in that initial call. And they walked up to the car. It's my understanding they ran a conversation with the person inside that car when police say the suspect pulled out a gun, then an exchange of gunfire. One CMPD officer was hit multiple times with serious conditions. Thankfully, he is now back home recovering. However, the suspect did pass away in the hospital on Tuesday from his injuries. He was a 37-year-old man.
And you reported this week on a very strange story, one of the likes of which I've never heard before. A former hotel worker at Marriott Uptown claims to have been fired in part for retaliation after a guest said he woke up to a stranger sexually assaulting him. The guest sued. Tell us more.
Okay, I'll try to land the plane very quickly here, as we say in our house. So there was in April of 2022, this allegedly happened where this guy visiting from another state was staying at the Marriott. He woke up to somebody who had allegedly broken into his hotel room, was sexually assaulting him. The suspect then grabbed some of his belongings and stole them and ran off. Cops were called. This lawsuit was filed. This bartender at Marriott claims that she is being fired because Marriott did not want her to testify in that lawsuit.
And she's not involved in security. Why is she even involved in this at all?
Correct. She claims that she kicked out the suspect who was not a guest well before, and she believes that she's being thrown under the bus.
So the backup quarterback came in last Sunday and beat Andy Dalton, beat the Las Vegas Raiders 36-22. Is this a turnaround in fortunes? We'll have to wait till this Sunday to see when they play the Bengals at home. We'll see what happens. Lisa Warp, Mary Ramsey, Mary C. Curtis, Hunter Sines, thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.